Good day, everyone. Welcome to the quarterly All EN Payments call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Kimberly Cutler. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our quarterly All EN Payments call. I am Kimberly Cutler, the EN Payments Manager, and I will be hosting today's call. The purpose of today's presentation is to provide insight into the payment process on the following agenda topics. So we're going to cover the e-pay stats, e-pay reminders. We have some frequently asked questions, tips for preventing denials, and we, at the end of the presentation, we will provide valuable resources or available resources to service providers, and we will also allow a forum for questions and answers at the end of the presentation. So starting in with our first agenda topic, we have the e-pay file stats. So TPM did complete the January 2021 e-pay file earlier this month. And as you can see here, we do have the numbers from that last e-pay file that we processed. So we did process a total of 16,373 claims, and just wanted to mention that recently we started paying phase one milestones for via e-pay. So with that change in of the 16,373 claims that were processed, 2,906 of those claims were paid from phase one milestone four claims. There were a total of 4,563 SSNs paid on this last file, and 397 of those SSNs came from phase one milestone four claims. And we paid a total of $8,618,584 from the last e-pay file. And again, since we recently added that we can pay phase one milestone four claims, $1,149,562 came from those claims. So it was a great addition to be able to pay phase one milestones for through the e-pay file now. So that just gives you a quick glance at what we paid from our January e-pay file. And moving to our next slide, we do process the e-pay file. We try to process it usually on a quarterly basis. So we want to make sure that we provide you with some e-pay reminders, because we are expecting to start processing the next e-pay file soon. And once we start to process the e-pay file, there will be an announcement in the portal alerting you guys that we are processing an e-pay file. So a few things to remember that ENs may submit payment requests through the ticket portal instead of waiting for ePay. And like I mentioned on the previous slide, phase one milestone four is now paid via ePay, but please remember ENs must still submit payment requests for phase one milestones one through three through the ticket portal, and you must provide proof of relationship. So the addition to ePay was only for phase one milestone four. All right, and unassigned tickets are not included in ePay, and ENs must have passed their annual services and support review. And the last reminder is the ePay file is processed in order of SSNs, not done. Sometimes we do get ENs that will call and ask us, you know, if they were actually on the e-pay file. But just remember that it's processed in order of SSNs, not DUNS. So when we start processing the e-pay file, you may receive some cases, or I'm sorry, you may receive some payments, and then there you may not receive some payments for maybe a week or two. But just know it's because we're processing in order of SSNs. Okay, the next agenda topic we want to focus on is we do get a lot of questions during the All EN Payments call. During the All EN call, we get a lot of payments centered around payments. So what we've decided to do for this call is just include some of the frequently asked questions that we get. So So the next four slides, we're actually going to go through some FAQs. So we'll start with the first one. Question, how does an EN get a beneficiary's disability date onset, or the DDO? So an EN can obtain the DDO by requesting a BPQI, which is a benefits plan inquiry. And by requesting the BPQI and submitting two consent for release of the information forms. So that's how, as an EN, you would be able to get the DDO date. Because you want to make sure that when you're completing for your phase one milestones, you want to make sure you're completing your 18-month look-back tool. And so having your DDO date will be helpful because you would be able to plug that date into your look-back tool. But, again, you have to request the BPQI in order to get that DDO date. That is not information that can be shared through the EN Payments Help Desk. So next question, can you submit multiple or bulk payment requests via the ticket portal? No. Claims must be submitted one at a time via the ticket portal. However, ENs may receive additional phase one milestone four claims, phase twos, and outcome payments. And what this simply means is that SSA will make all payments for an SSN if at least one payment is requested through the ticket portal. So even though you're not able to submit your payment request like a bulk or multiple payments at one time, once you submit at least one payment request, SSA and TPM will make all available payments. As long as criteria are met, we will be able to make those additional payments. But you must submit at least one via the ticket portal. You're not able to kind of bulk it all together. So that's one of the questions that we get a lot, is how they can submit those payments. So earnings already proven in the system. What is needed for phase one milestone one through three? ENs must submit pay stubs or a completed proof of relationship, also known as the POR, form with detailed services provided to the beneficiary for the requested milestone period. So whenever you're requesting your phase one milestones one through three, whether earnings already proven or not in the system, please remember that you must provide proof of relationship. And that proof of relationship is established by pay stubs or a completed POR form. But those are the two things that are required. Because in addition to earnings, you must have your proof of relationship. If the EN is reporting wages in the portal, do we need to send them to the local SSA field office? Yes. Please report earnings to the local SSA field office as well. We just want to make sure that all of the earnings that your clients or your beneficiaries are making, that information is reported properly to SSA field office. We do not want any overpayments for the beneficiaries, and we just want to make sure that we're covering all bases. So even though you're entering them in the portal, please make sure you're sending them to the SSA field office as well. All right. Is there a time limit to submit for a payment? Yes. An EN shall request a payment no later than 24 months following the month the ticket holder's work and earnings meet the criteria for SSA to make the payment. SSA will not accept payment requests for periods outside this 24-month window. Now, we do know that there was an exception made that we made an exception to that 24-month rule when it came to outcome payments. So that is something that was in place, and I think it may end next month, May 2021. But the rule of thumb for the time limit for submitting a payment, just remember, is that it must be submitted within that 24-month window. So there is a time limit. Now, how long does the EN have to fax evidence of earnings after requesting payments? So to answer this question, ENs have 9 business days. Now, you will need to use the fax cover sheet provided via the ticket portal to submit evidence of earnings. So, again, we do get you know, we talk about, and we're going to talk about this a little later on in the call, about preventing denials, but you do have 9 business days to submit that information to TPM to complete the processing of your payment request. Okay, continuing with our FAQs on slide 7. If a beneficiary is laid off and receives paid vacation and sick time, can we submit those as earnings for payments? The answer to that question is no. Vacation and sick time do not qualify as earnings for payments. Please remember that payments are based on work and earnings. That is how we process the payments with TPM and SSA. It is based on work and earnings. Is the POR, or proof of relationship, required for phase 2 milestones or outcomes? The answer is no. Proof of relationship is only required for phase 1 milestones 1 through 3. And remember, that is required even if the portal gives you the note earnings already proven or earnings already established. For phase 1 milestones 1 through 3, ENs must provide proof of relationship, again, which is your pay stubs or the completed proof of relationship form. So, do ENs have to sign up for ePay? That is a question that we get. The answer is no. ENs are eligible for ePay as long as they have passed their annual service and support reviews, not on hold or terminated. So there's nothing that, you know, you don't have to do anything to be on ePay, but if you're not meeting certain requirements such as not passing your annual service and support reviews, that will prevent you from being eligible for ePay. Okay. So those few slides just talked about the frequently asked questions. We know that you guys probably have a lot more, but again, we will have, at the end of the presentation, we will have a session for questions and answers. So the next few slides, we're going to talk about tips for preventing denials. Now, I just wanted to mention that over the last few months, there's been an increase in the number of denied cases. We see a lot of different reasons, but we wanted to just provide just a few tips to help prevent such denials. We do have information available on the Ticket to Work website that you will be able to look and find some of these tips or tips for all of the denials. But because we've seen an increase in the number of denials, we figured we just wanted to share some tips with you all to help to decrease that number so we're not seeing so many denials. First, we want to make sure that you review all relevant materials. Make sure you're reading the Gov delivery messages that come out. Make sure you attend calls such as this one, the All-In Payments call. If, you know, they're held, you know, on a quarterly basis, the last Tuesday of the month, you know, the quarter. So if you are unable to attend the call, please make sure that you visit the Your Ticket to Work events archives on the Ticket to Work website. There you'd be able to find the presentation and the recap from the calls. But these are very informative calls, so the calls can help you prevent denials as well. So you want to make sure that you attend these calls as much as you can. Review the Ticket to Work website content. Read the payment denial reasons under the Ticket Work program for a complete list of payment denials with explanations and tips. That's what I mentioned earlier. You can go to that under the payments denial reasons, and you can see a list of denials. It explains what that denial means, but it also gives you the tips to prevent such denials. Your ticket assignment. Confirm that the beneficiary's ticket was assigned to the requesting EN during the claim month or period. So, you know, this is all a part of helping prevent the denials. Of course, you want to make sure that the ticket is assigned to your agency. So you want to make sure that you're checking that. You want to check for the first available claim month. So you want to confirm that the first claim month submitted is the month after the EN's ticket assignment date. You cannot receive payment for claim months prior to ticket assignment. And please remember, the EN ticket assignment date is the same date as the beneficiary's ticket assignment date, unless the EN transmits the individual work plan, or the IWP, more than 14 days after the latest signature date. Then, if that happens, if the EN submits it 14 days after the latest signature date, then the EN ticket assignment date is the same date TPM receives the IWP. And so here we have an example. So EN and beneficiary signed the IWP on February the 12th, 2020. But the EN submits the IWP to TPM on March 3rd, 2020. Because it's outside of the 14 days when the EN submitted the IWP to TPM, the EN ticket assignment date is now March 2nd, 2020. So what we've done is, even though the EN and a beneficiary signed the IWP in February, the EN didn't send it to us until March, outside of the 14-day window. Now the ticket assignment date is going to take effect the date, it's going to be in effect the date that we received it, which was the March 2nd. So in other words, whenever the EN and the beneficiary sit down and you go through your individual work plan and you discuss your short-term and your long-term goals and the services that you as the EN are going to provide to the beneficiary, when you sign the IWP, which means you are in agreement of working together, you're going to help the beneficiary, as they have identified their short and long-term goals and what services they need. You as the EN have provided the services you're going to provide. Once you go through that and you both sign the IWP, go ahead and send it in. Go ahead and send it in so that your ticket assignment date will be the same as the signature date on the IWP. And the beneficiary ticket assignment date, that's the latest signature date on the IWP. So, again, just making sure that once you sit down with the beneficiary and you go through the individual work plan, that it is signed and it is submitted in a timely manner. Okay. Prior VR services. You want to check the ticket portal to determine if the beneficiary's current ticket has a previous history of working with the state VR agency, and that they were working with them after January 2002. Or simply talk to your beneficiary. These are things that you want to, maybe during your intake process, these are the questions that you want to ask your beneficiary, and just finding out if they've had previously or they previously worked with the state VR agency. Because you want to know that if prior VR services were provided under the VR cost reimbursement program and the case was closed with a successful closure status within 18 months prior to the ticket assignment date, phase one milestones are not available to any EN or a state VR agency acting as an EN that subsequently received the ticket assignment. So that's huge. So this will help you prevent the denials of your phase one milestones one. Or let me say this, it will help you know that you're not eligible for phase one milestones one through four. Let me say it that way. So these are the things that you want to check when it comes to your prior VR services. Okay? All right, moving right along. This still talks about on the next slide, slide 12, we're still talking about prior VR services. The key thing here is the date. If prior VR services were provided under the ticket program and the VR received the cost reimbursement payment after January 2002, phase one milestones are not available to any EN or state VR agency acting as an EN that receives the ticket assignment. So the key thing to remember when you're checking for your prior VR services is checking the date. So you want to make sure, you know, you want to check to see if there was a cost reimbursement payment. You want to check to see if the successful closure was within 18 months. But you're looking at all of these factors for dates after January 2002. All right, continuing with tips for preventing denials, the 18-month look back. Earnings at the trial work level or TWL level or TWL during this period may impact the availability of some or all phase one milestones for that beneficiary. So just remember, the 18-month look-back does not automatically deny or prior earnings within an 18-month period does not automatically deny all of your phase ones. So all of them could be denied or some of them could be denied, but you want to make sure that you're completing your 18-month look-back too. That's available on the website. Now, be aware that Social Security's database is a living database. This simply means a beneficiary's earnings can appear at any time and usually months and occasionally years after the earnings occur. So you're going to complete your 18-month look back to the best of your ability. You're going to complete the 18-month look back to using the information that you have. You know, whether you talk to the beneficiary and they let you know when they were working and how much money they were making, so if it was above trial work level, so you're going to use that information. And when you submit that information and you submit for payment, the reason we mentioned that SSA's database is a living database is because the earnings that you may have, those earnings, but when you submit for payment, there may be additional earnings in SSA's database that we will also use to complete the 18-month look back to. But just make sure you're doing your due diligence when before submitting for your phase ones. ENs occasionally experience overpayments because of the late posting of earnings information. So that's why we wanted to mention it's a living database, and there are different periods of time when those earnings can post. Now, the look back period for earnings is a maximum of 18 months prior to the ticket assignment date. However, the look-back period is for months between the date of disability onset and the beneficiary's ticket assignment date. So this period could possibly be less than 18 months. And I mentioned about a few slides back, I did mention about how you can obtain the DDO date, because this is where it applies when you're completing your 18-month look-back too, if you have access to that information. And one last slide for tips for preventing denials. Documenting earnings. Check available sources of information on earnings to document the beneficiary's earnings during the claim period or claim month for which you are seeking payment. Please make sure you're using the available resources that we have on the Ticket to Work website, the payments at a glance, that actually will tell you what's required for each payment, so you would know if you're submitting for a phase one milestone one that you need 1 month of earnings at trial work level. So you want to make sure that whatever your requested claim month is or claim months are, that you have checked all of your available sources for earnings information and making sure that you're meeting the requirement for earnings before submitting for your payment request. So whether, you know, if it's phase one milestone ones, you're looking for your trial work level earnings, and if it's phase twos and outcomes, you're looking for SGA level. So you want to make sure that you have the correct earnings amount before submitting for your requested claim month and payment type. So those are just a few tips for preventing denials. As I mentioned earlier, we do encourage you to check the website. Check the denials, look at what each denial means, check to make, and, you know, go down and take a look at the tips that are provided there. There was a recent change where, as ENs, you now can see the comments that once we deny a case, you guys now have the ability to actually see what the denial comments are. So please make sure that you're paying attention to those. If you have a little, you know, if you're not completely sure, that's when I would encourage you to go to the website and look up on the denial reasons and the explanations to make sure you're very clear on why your case was denied, so that in the event when you resubmit, if you actually see that your case was denied because there was some information missing or the earnings amount did not satisfy the payment, that will help you so that when you submit your next payment, you'll make sure, like, okay, I know that I have to have – my case was denied because I didn't have enough earnings, so I know that when I submit again, I need to make sure that I have the earnings. So it's a really good tool and document to just look to make sure, because, of course, the goal of TPM and SSA, we want to make sure that you guys are paid for the services that you are providing to the beneficiaries when the beneficiary reaches certain milestones. So we try to give you as much information that we as we can to help prevent the denying of your payment request. So please take a look at those and gain as much information as you can. So we're almost done with the presentation piece of the call today, but I wanted to make sure on slide 16 that you guys are utilizing the contact information here. We do have the resources if you have payment-related issues, if you have issues related to ticket assignment, the service provider website, you know, or the ticket portal, those phone numbers and email addresses are there for your use. Please make sure if you have those, you know, questions that you're reaching out through the help desk Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. And you can see the toll-free number with the options depending on what your call's about or what you need help with. You can see the options there. And you can also email us your issues. Please remember that you cannot send any type of PII via email. The thing that you can do when you're reaching out, especially for a payment-related issue, is just send us your work case number. We can look up the information via the work case number. Okay, so this completes, like I said, the presentation portion of today's call. Now what we will do is we will open the line for questions. I just want to do a quick reminder that questions related to specific SSNs may require assistance from the payments help desk. So if you have an SSN that, you know, kind of gets into the weeds very, you know, specific, then you might want to just reach out to the help desk. Because we do not have all of the information. We're not able to look at the details of the case, so we may not be able to answer that. So I just want to kind of put that reminder out. But at this point, Nicole, if you don't mind, do we have any – we can open the lines up for questions, please.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone today, please press star and then 1 on your touchtone phone. Again, that is star 1 if you would like to enter the queue to ask a question over the phone today, and we'll pause for just a moment to give everyone a chance to signal.
Hi, Kim. This is Adele. I think there's we do have a few track questions, but I think we want to clarify because we did ask indicate to send in an IWP, and I think that's for new ENs to send, though, and most of the time they're doing it through the portal. Isn't that right?
I do believe that's right. So what was the question? Because I can't send it in.
Right. It's okay. We've been in this game for a little while, and we're used to when the ENs used to send it in. So I could see how that can happen.
Well, I'll change it and take out send it in. I would just say make sure when you are assigning the ticket to your agency, because we want to make sure that your dates, as soon as you know, like I said, meet with them and you have the agreed date that you're sending it in. Within the 14 days. Sorry. Sorry
Thank
for the confusion. Yeah, that was a little old school on my behalf. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nicole, do we have any calls on the line? I mean, any other questions on the line?
We do. We have a question from Natalie Harrison from Lighthouse, Louisiana.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. My question is regarding work and earnings. I submitted for payment for a beneficiary who was in phase one, and she received a $1,500 bonus because she worked during COVID at a school. And the payment was denied for phase one, and they automatically paid out outcome. And then her status went back to current pay. So I'm just a little confused on, you know, first, does the bonus amount, the $1,500 bonus, does that count as work in earnings? And then I'm confused as to why would she be in non-pay and then the very next month back into current pay?
Okay. Well, so the bonus comes from your work in earnings, correct? SSA, you can jump in if I'm wrong. But I wanted to just explain that the second part, when you mentioned that you submitted for phase one milestone one, but then they paid outcomes. So at some point, the beneficiaries, the benefits went into suspense. So, in other words, they were not, according to what we could see in our system, the beneficiary, for whatever your requested claim month was, the beneficiary was no longer receiving a federal cash benefit. So at that point, we can no longer pay phase one milestone ones. So that would explain, I just wanted to explain, that's why you received an outcome versus the phase one. And also, but if they went back into current pay the very next month, that is something that's handled on the back end with the field offices. When it comes to payments, what we do is we just check the benefit status. We don't control whether the beneficiary is receiving, you know, whether they're current pay or not. We just make a payment based on whatever's in the system. So that's why you receive the outcome and not the phase one. But I do believe that that $1,500 bonus was due to work and earnings. Am I correct with that? Anyone from SSA?
You know, actually, this is Patrice, and I just wanted to clarify the question. So the bonus came, was it like a COVID-related bonus, or was it like a regular bonus? Can I have a clarification?
No, it was a COVID-related bonus. If I can just back up a little bit, just a quick bit. We billed for milestone, phase one, milestone one, and we received the payment. When it came up for phase one, milestone two, I always use the portal, the ticket assignment screen, to check to see the current pay status before I submit billing, because that's my goal, to like reduce denials. So when I checked the portal, it was eligible to bill for the phase one milestone two. But when I submitted the check stubs and they saw the check stubs, they went in, made her non-pay for March and put her back in current pay for April, denied the phase one milestone two, immediately paid out the outcome. So that's where I'm confused, because it was showing that she was eligible for us to submit for billing. I don't know. I'm probably taking too much time, but I don't know.
Well, no. So Kim, I can say we did make the SSA made the decision to count that as earnings, like a COVID related bonus.
Yeah.
We would count
yeah.
that as earnings, but it would count toward a payment. Kim, if you could respond to the intricacies of you know, whether it maybe should have or shouldn't have pushed them into outcome, that part I can't really respond to.
Yeah. This is Deborah. Can you hear me? This is Deborah.
Yes, Ms. Tennessee. Oh,
hello. If that was current, if that was included toward earnings, and you said it's non-pay, and of course we will have to get more information from you, but what it sounds like to me, if you say non-pay, is this an SSI recipient?
Yes.
Okay. Then what happened was that $1,500 was used toward earnings, and the benefits went into non-pay due to worker earnings. Patrice and Katie, and this is just for SSA and TPM staff, they went into an N01 staff, a payment, you know, a payment status of N01, which is non-pay. When you're in non-pay, you're not eligible for phase one milestones. You're eligible for outcome. So what happened was the next month, the beneficiary's earnings dropped, came back to less than SGA, because that $1,500 sounded like it put them over SGA. Next month, they went back to whatever their current earnings were, and that put them back into current pay. Once you're in an outcome status, and you due to worker earnings, and you go back to receiving a federal beneficiary, a federal benefit payment, you cannot receive any milestones. The next payment you will be eligible for is when the beneficiary goes back into the outcome status of non-pay due to worker earnings. So that's what happened in that case.
The earnings push the beneficiary's earnings level over trial work level to SGA, and they were placed into a non-pay status due to worker earnings.
For that 1 month and because of that bonus?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrice. Thank you, Ms. Tennessee.
You're welcome.
Sure. All right.
And we have a question from Jamie Head from Full Circle Employment Solutions.
Hey, guys. I have a couple general questions, I hope. But one question, I know, Kimberly, you had mentioned, you know, the portal is a living portal and things constantly change. So we had a question. If we get phase two payments and then we move into milestone outcome payments, for a beneficiary, and then later on, after we've gotten some of those milestone outcome payments, Social Security does a work review and they find, oh, this person has a subsidy or IRWIs, and they retro the subsidy or IRWIs back to a certain date, and it puts them back under SGA, back into pay status for those months that we got milestone outcome payments for. Do we get overpaid then for those milestone outcome payments?
I'll take a stab and then I'll let you go.
Okay, go ahead.
You may have to clean up after I go through. So I want to say the answer is no, because whenever when we made the payment, we make the payments, like I said, based on the benefit status at the time. So understanding the question correctly, you receive phase two milestones and then you moved into the outcome stage, but then SSA updated or retroactively corrected the record to now back in current pay. So it wasn't the EN's fault. You know, it was just something they retroactively updated. So you would not be charged with an overpayment. It's just that if you were receiving your outcomes and now they're back in current pay, you will no longer be able to receive, you know, you won't receive any other payments because now, like Ms. Tennessee mentioned on the question before, once they enter the outcome status, you cannot go back and receive milestones. Did you want to add?
Sure.
Ms. Tennessee?
That's correct. We will not charge you an overpayment. That's why one of the things we do when we work these cases, we take a snapshot of what the beneficiary's record looked like at the time we made a decision to pay or not to pay. So if the benefit status was current pay at the time that we made the payment and later SSA changed it to suspense due to worker earnings or placed the beneficiary in outcome status, we do not charge you an overpayment for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really good to know. So if we are getting overpayment notices for those scenarios, is there a way that we can, what would be our best recourse to follow up with that?
I would suggest, or like I said, in that case, if you say you're receiving overpayment notices, I would just tell you to respond to the team that actually sent you the overpayment notices, because it could be that it's an overpayment for a different beneficiary and they're doing a recoupment. But unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to answer because, again, that's one of those cases where the details we would need to see. But my suggestion to you is to just respond when you receive the overpayment notices, just respond to that team and just let them know your concerns there so they can maybe provide a little bit more detail about what exactly your overpayment is for.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you. And is it okay if I ask another question?
Sure.
Okay. But my other question is, so for Title II beneficiaries, I know that their ticket can remain assigned to an EN even if, you know, they work through their EPE and now they're terminated because they're above SGA, we can keep their ticket assigned up until we exhaust all payments. Is it true is it the same with the SSI benefit? So if somebody's already assigned to us and their SSI completely terminates, because they're over the 1619B threshold, can their ticket also stay assigned to us until we exhaust payments?
Let me just make sure I understand. So you have an SSI client, SSI only, and then their ticket and the ticket terminates?
Correct. Or not the ticket terminated. No, their SSI terminated, but their ticket is still assigned to us. Like, it's still showing that they're assigned to us.
Oh, okay. I'm just trying to write it down.
So their ticket hasn't terminated with us, and we're confused because we were thinking under the impression that once their SSI terminates, that their ticket would terminate, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Okay. Ms. Tempsey, do you want to take that one?
I'm going to have to fall back on SSA, but I think it's the ticket that would have to terminate before we would stop making the payments. And there are a number of reasons why there are terminations for SSI. There are different codes. So I think this would be an issue for SSA, to respond to, because from what I see in making payments, we normally pay the ticket out. Unless the ticket terminates or there's some other reason that we're given not to pay. And I don't think it's just the regular termination. Again, SSI has a number of termination codes. So this would be something that we would have to have SSA respond to.
This is Katie Stabinger. Right. Without the specific SSN you're talking about, tickets do not terminate. If the beneficiary's benefits cease because of worker earnings, right? Because the point is that they are participating in the Ticket to Work program and we would not close their ticket because you're obviously helping them. If you have a case where their ticket terminated for some other reason, their benefits terminated for some other reason, but they have an active ticket you don't believe they should have, you could report it to us and we could take a look. But, the programming has been out there for 20 plus years and, I'm not aware of a current issue where things aren't working. As long as they have an active ticket, you can receive payments.
Does
that make sense? Okay, yeah, if you look at the portal, it looks, they have an active ticket, they're still assigned to you, right? Then, yeah, everything's good. There's nothing you should have to worry about.
Okay, great, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tennessee. Thank you, Katie.
Okay. And we have a few more questions in the queue, but would you like to take some from the chat?
Yep, we'll take one more for the phone, and then we'll move to the chat.
Okay, we'll take a question from Robert Perkins from Heart of Worship.
Good afternoon, everyone. When the phase ones are not available due to the 18-month look-back, does ePay automatically take those payments off the table, or should we still continue to submit manually? I've seen a lot of payments that maybe 1 and 2 is available, but 3 and 4 is off, and then I'll have to take a screenshot and still send it the manual fax way instead of it automatically just being denied when the phase 1 and 2 is processed.
Okay, so a couple of things. So phase 1 milestones 1 through 3 are not paid via ePay. So if and because of the look back too, and we talked about it earlier, when due to look back earnings, some or all of the phase 1 milestones may not be available. So if the case is where you submit for a phase 1 if phase 1 milestone 1 and 2 are not available, but you can get 3 and 4, then you would have to submit for phase 1 milestones 3 and 4. Now, you mentioned a screenshot through the portal. So I think what another issue is, and so is it that the portal is not allowing you to submit for those milestones? Because
correct.
You say you have to, okay. So, yeah, so right now the way the portal is set up is that sometimes it will not allow you to request phase 1 milestones because it's pulling earnings, the portal's pulling earnings from a verified source, right? So what happens is you have to submit those requests manually. So if you submit for a phase 1 milestone 1, what we're going to do, TPM, we're going to do, even if you submit your 18-month look back to, we're still going to do our due diligence, and we're going to complete our look back to. So if our look back to based on the earnings that either you, you know, as an EN submitted in, submitted or earnings verified in SSA's database or a combination of, we're going to use those earnings. So whatever milestones are excluded based on those earnings, we will deny those in-house. So TPM will deny those. So in the event that, let's say that you can't get phase one milestone one and two, but you are eligible for three and four, I know it's frustrating and fingers crossed that's going to change in the future, but what will happen is as of right now, even though you took the time to submit for your phase one milestone one, we denied one and two, you still would have to then submit for your phase one milestone three. You would have to, yeah, you would still have to submit it manually. But like I said, hopefully that's going to change in the near future, that you will not have to go through that process, fingers crossed. But for right now, yes, you would have to go through that same process again and submit it through the portal. I hope that's
okay,
what you were
you.
Asking. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I've just seen a lot of people that are coming in lately have some work in the previous 18 months, and so I know we're kind of scattered, so I was trying to see if there was, because I used to get them denied when the phase one, payment one and two, they were just denied because they weren't available, but now they're still in the system, so I have to wait, you know, three extra months or 6 months before I can get it denied to go on to the phase two.
Well, I would like to take a look at that case because that's not how it should be. It should be, like I said, whenever you submit for phase one, we check, you know, based on the 18-month look back, and if you're not eligible for one or all of them, then we deny them. And we do that so that you guys don't have to wonder, you know, oh, I'm going to submit for phase one milestone one, you know, and then we don't just, oh, you can't get phase one milestone one, and we deny that one, and we, you know, like, oh, well, we didn't deny two, and then you request two and then it's denied, at least not for look-back earnings. So that's why I said we should just make sure that I take a look at that case because that's the process. Once you submit for a milestone, phase one milestones, we will deny if there are any exclusions, right? We would deny the ones that you aren't eligible for. But if that's not what's going on where we're denying, say, a phase one milestone one and two, and then you wait till you meet the requirements and submit for phase one milestone three, and then we deny that, you know, that's normally not how it works, but it could be something else that is being denied for. Or at the time when we denied your phase one milestone one, we denied it based on earnings that were in the system and that you could get three or four. But by the time you submit for three, earnings or, you know, could have updated, and that could have caused us to deny the case. But that's one of those cases that we would need to look at the details to see.
Okay.
Yep. So I would just encourage you to contact the help desk with that one, and hopefully that will explain, you know, what's going on with that case.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Nicole. And what we'll do at this point is, Adele, we have some questions in the chat.
Yes, ma'am, and let me apologize ahead of time if you have a little bit of background noise. We have a few beneficiaries who are no longer receiving Social Security benefits but continue to be in the Ticket to Work program. Could we still request payments for them?
Okay, so in this case, I'm thinking if they're no longer receiving a federal cash benefit due to worker earnings, and they have at least SGA level earnings, then yes, you could possibly receive outcome payments.
Okay, appreciate that. Here, if an EN submits a request for payment but does not have the history of prior earnings or prior payments to another EN, will the system correct the request to the correct milestone and make the payment?
If you're requesting for phase ones and you do not have, make sure I understand it, if you're requesting for phase one milestones and you do not have any history of prior earnings, once we receive that request, TPM, SSA, will complete an 18-month look back based on the earnings information that we have. So if we have earnings that will exclude those payments, we will deny those payments. As far as prior payments to other ENs, again, we will use the available resources that we have, the information that's in SSA's database, so that if we do see that the ticket was previously assigned to a different EN, then we look at the details of the case. It could be a possible split payment between the current EN and the prior EN, but again, that's those are details that we would look at. But yeah, so even if the EN does not have access to prior information, we will use what we have to determine the proper payment.
And just a follow-up to that would be, alternatively, will the EN be advised at the correct milestone to request payment, and does the entire documented request with the pay stub have to be resubmitted?
Well, we would have to see the details of the case, but if it's denied, now that's something new, ENs can actually see the comments. So the EN would be able to see why the case was denied, and they'd be able to move forward at that point. And yes, if it's denied, completely denied, the EN would have to resubmit their payment request.
Okay, thank you for that. I think I have one more here. One moment. What circumstances would there be when a recoupment would occur for an overpayment?
Repeat the question, Adele.
What circumstances would there be when a recoupment would occur for an overpayment? So I'm figuring they're asking what would happen.
Yeah. So anytime there's an improper payment made, then SSA will initiate a recoupment of payments. So if we talked earlier, Ian asked if they received outcome payments and then SSA updated a system to current pay, would they be responsible for an overpayment? And the answer is no. So if SSA's database corrects benefit status, then the ENs are not charged with an overpayment. If at any time, and I mentioned this earlier, that SSA has a living database, so there may be times an overpayment would occur when earnings update. And usually it applies to the 18 months prior to ticket assignment. So that's when an overpayment would occur, whenever there's an improper payment made. But the system updating the benefits would not cause an overpayment. And if an EN is an occurred overpayment, they will be notified of, which SSN the overpayment is for and how much, and that information will be sent to them. So it's only if there's an improper payment made that we would initiate a recoupment of the money. All right. Hopefully that's you good, Adele. Did that answer the question?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And so we have about 1 minute left. So, Nicole, I would like to take, if we have any, one more question from the phone line.
Okay. We have a question from Cindy Newton from North Central County Consortium.
Okay. Go ahead.
Ms. Newton, we're unable to hear you. Please check your mute function.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had put it on the chat because I didn't think you would get to me. So we're kind of new at this, and so bear with me with my questions. So one of the things we're having problems with questions on some of our ticket holders that we should probably be getting some payments on. What unique identifier are we supposed to use to ask about somebody? We don't find any unique identifier other than, of course, their Social Security number, which we can't use their name, to indicate to Social Security who we're talking about. Because the only numbers we found are on some of the reimbursements, but the ticket, the number that's on there is the same for everybody. Okay. We don't see any portal that tells us how we communicate with Social Security about who we're talking about.
Okay. So this is directly for SSA. Are you talking about just payment questions? If you have questions about payments, how do you let us know who you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay, so if it's a question about if it's a question about payments where you've already submitted a payment request, then you can email us the work case number that's going to be associated with your case in the portal. If not, if you haven't generated, okay, go ahead.
Where is that number? Because my staff member who deals with the portal says she does not see any number that is unique to an individual in there.
Okay, so Katie, can you
compare in the portal you could be looking?
So Katie, did you want to jump in? Like she's asking where would they locate the work case number?
Sure. We're making the assumption here that you have requested a payment. Have you requested a payment?
Yes. We've also had some difficulties requesting a payment and are getting some error messages and don't really understand what they mean.
It does sound like you might need some handholding, some extra help with navigating through the portal. I would recommend contacting the help desk so someone could walk you through it. But there are two different links for EN payments. There are pending payments and payments already made to me. So if you requested a payment and you have a question about the payment you requested, in that pending payments, you will see a work case number associated with your pending payment. That's how we keep track of all the requests that you send in. They get a unique work case number. But if you're having a problem getting to that point where you've made a work case in our system that has a unique number, we have to get you to that step first.
Yeah, not quite sure if we know how to get to pending payments.
Right. It does sound like I would recommend calling the help desk and getting help with navigating the portal, making sure, you have all that correct. And making sure you should have a copy of the Ticket Portal User Guide. That would also help you, that walkthrough through how to do everything. It does sound like you need some, some startup help.
Yeah, I don't know if we've received that Ticket Holder User Guide.
Yeah, the Ticket Portal User Guide, yeah. So I would definitely recommend contacting the help desk.
Now, what causes some people to drop off? Like we've had people on a list, that we're, trying to request payments, and then some people drop off. So are they supposed to drop off after you get three milestones and an outcome payment?
So we have two different lists. Two different ways to keep track of your payment request, and then we have two different ways to keep track of the tickets assigned to your EN. There's beneficiaries currently assigned to me and then previously assigned to me. So if a beneficiary was assigned to you, like is today assigned to you, you'll see it on that list. But if something happened, say it's possible the ticket holder unassigned the ticket themselves, they, you wouldn't know about it, but you would see them then move to the other list previously assigned to me, and you can find them there. And you can still, request payments on ticket holders who have unassigned them tickets from you. So it does sound like you need some help navigating the portal.
Yeah.
Those are like the four big links that you need, really. Those will help you navigate who your clients are and where to find them, and then you can navigate from those lists currently assigned to me and previously assigned to me, you can navigate from there also to request payments as well.
Okay. How far back can you report wages?
Okay. So in order to receive for payment purposes, you have to submit your payment request within 24 months of when the beneficiary actually earned the money to satisfy the payment.
Okay, so you have 24 months to report those earnings.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And if people are, we have a self-employed truck driver. He was one we were having trouble getting the screen would not, there was some sort of error to try to, report his earnings. It wouldn't allow us to put his earnings in. So there's no stipulation they can't be self-employed. Is that correct? Or? We have copies of payments for him, they're not, he's not working for a regular employer. So is that allowable?
Yeah, for some reason, like you were kind of going in and out. But what I would just suggest is Whenever you run into problems with the portal, and Katie just mentioned this, when you're submitting for payment requests, I would always encourage you to reach out to the payments help desk. They will be able to guide you through. Like if you're, unfortunately, you know, I'm not able to see what you see or what you're going through, but if you reach out mm-hmm. to the payments help desk or the EN Systems help desk, they will be able to walk you through. Because if it's something that you're coming about or coming across just once, then maybe it's just that particular client. But if it's something that's a little bit more involved, I would just suggest reaching out. That way they can take the details of what you're seeing and be able to provide you guidance from there.
Okay. And then we have to assign at least 2 tickets a year. Is that the criteria to stay as an active EN? I'm trying to remember what we were told.
So because this is the payments call, when it comes to ticket assignment, unfortunately, unless someone from SSA can chime in.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, just reach out to the help desk. And even if you have questions, once you reach out to the payments help desk, if it's questions related to, you know, ticket assignment and things like that, they will be able to guide you in the right direction. Because we want to make sure that you get, you know, your questions answered. But when it comes to ticket assignment, this wouldn't be the next, you know, this. Be able to find much information. Right. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your questions. Okay. And we are about 7 minutes past the hour, so I want to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Thank you for your questions via the phone, via the chat. And I just want to say enjoy the rest of your day, and I hope everyone will join us for our next All-EN Payments call that will be held at 1 o'clock on July the 27th. So until then, please take care and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. We appreciate your participation today.